afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. Today, the second and third segment today, I am pleased to have James Corbett as a guest. And of course, as you all know, it was previously recorded Wednesday evening. So it's a great program. So make sure you stay tuned. But I am live right now for Friday, September 21st, 2018. So let's get to the market report today. Boy, I'll tell you what, early morning trade, gold was actually higher. And when I got to work this morning, I turned on the screen to see what we were doing. It tanked. It was down to 1190 from 1206, 1207 from yesterday. And it did come back. And now we're still only down $8 at $1,190.99, so it's flirting at that $1,200 level. Saw the same thing with silver, but it happened so quick. I know a lot of people tried to capture that 1412 low, but you know it was only there, you know, in the blink of an eye. So it was impossible to really get those low lows. But it came back, but it's now down only 4 cents at $14.37. Platinum was down $7 at $831. A little pressure on palladium, down two at $1,057. Both platinum and palladium had a great week, and so just a little pressure on that. We're going to talk a little bit about the sales of Silver Eagles today, but first let's go ahead and see what the dollar did today. Of course, it was stronger. It was only stronger by 0.31 at 94.21, so gold shouldn't have reacted to the degree that it did with that little bit of a stronger U.S. dollar. Crude oil was back up too, up 0.53 at 70.85. Paper markets today, you know, record highs once again for the Dow, up 68 points, 26,725. The NASDAQ was down 41 points at 7,986. The S&P was down 1 at 2,929. The 10-year yield is still holding above 3.07, up a 0.1%. You have Asian and European markets there on a tear, and I think mainly because you're having little I shouldn't say little, but there's a little disruption over there with the Brexit. Doesn't seem to be going very well. Prime Minister May is certainly having an issue with trying to get her deal done with Brexit. So perhaps that's also having a positive market for those European stocks, thinking that, you know, perhaps it's you know, they won't have to worry about it. Bitcoin was higher a little bit today, at least not for now. It was up a little over 3%. Well, actually, it was closer to 4% at $67.57 today. And I do have a little bit of techie news later on in the program. But first, we're going to talk about the sales of Silver Eagles. We had a great month in September for the U.S. Mint sales. They did remove their temporary supply restriction. And as the silver price has continued to trend to these new lows since the beginning of the month, you know, we saw that some dealers, the authorized dealers, wiped out the inventory at the U.S. Mint, so therefore the U.S. Mint had to cut back on its monthly supply, but they removed their temporary restriction. Since the U.S. Mint resumed sales of Silver Eagles, they have reached over 1.9 million. And what's amazing, and it's like 1.9 million really isn't that much compared to what we've seen in the past couple of years. But it is up 28% compared to August, which is terrific. And we still have, what, 9-10 days left in the month? And but the Silver Eagle sales so far in September are the highest all year, except for the usual spike that we see in January, because that is the release of the new year for that coin. And so according to the figures that were released by the U.S. Mint, Silver Eagle sales fell to a low of only 380,000 in May. And we started to see that tick up a little bit in July. But interestingly, Silver Eagle sales in the 2 months of August and September are about the same for the previous 5 months. And so again, people are taking advantage of low price silver. Everybody knows where silver is going to go. And another interesting tidbit is that the U.S. Mint has sold a total of 515 million Silver Eagles since it started the program in 1986. So a good month, although it's a great increase from August. We still have 9-10 days left, and we'll see where we end up at the end of the month. 60% of Americans are willing to pay for 10% more for the products with the Made in America label. And Made in America means a lot more than just where items are manufactured. When presented with this concept, 66% of American consumers associate them with higher quality, high quality product, Made in America fairer prices, and safe working conditions. Up to 80% of consumers prefer products with the Made in America tag, and 60% of Americans are willing to pay 10% more for products that carry that label. And though the United States imports almost six times what it exports, understanding the essential impacts of advanced domestic manufacturing and its effects on national global economies, you know, just can't be ignored. And that's good, because we saw, and I'm going to talk, if I have time, I'm going to talk a little bit about the percentage of the tariffs on the impact on Procter & Gamble here in a little bit. And I don't think 10%, I think Americans will pay 10% more for products. Where it gets interesting is when the 25% tariffs are tacked on here the first of the year. I'm not sure if it was December or January, the exact time, but the first 10% went in, into effect this month, and will go into effect this month, I believe the 24th, which would be Monday. And so 10%, yeah, we'll pay 10%. 25, 30. That's where the big questions comes in. And, you know, we've been hearing that the incomes are increasing. And as always, the more you make, the more they take. And now not only do we talk about 10% prices increasing, there's another area that's going to rise in cost, and that's your loans. Just about every type of consumer loan is going to get more expensive, or is already getting more expensive. This week, we had the yield on the Treasury Department's 10-year bond that rose above the 3%, and it seems to keep climbing. We have the Fed meeting next week. You know, we'll see if they raise or if they won't. Based on the economy and inflation, they should. I don't think they will. Not when you have the 10-year at 3.7. But even if you don't have money invested in bonds, it's still going to affect you if you're buying a home or refinancing. We know that mortgage rates are tied to a 10-year note. And when its yield goes up, and so do mortgage rates. So again, you're going to have people with adjustable rates. That's still a product out there. So, you know, when people with adjustable rates get their increases, yeah, they're going to be shell-shocked. The MBA, the Mortgage Bankers Association, reports the 30-year fixed rate mortgage rate averaged 4.88% last week, and that's the highest level since 2011. Let's see what else is. Unfortunately, that's not the only loan that's becoming more costly. The Federal Reserve continues on its path, of gradually raising the federal funds rate. The average credit card rate is already at a record high and will go up each time the Fed hikes rates. The Credit Bureau TransUnion estimates that will affect about 92 million consumers who carry credit card balances and will create a financial hardship for the 9 million of them. So, yes, you hear people all the time saying, well, they only raised it 0.25%. They've only raised it 0.25%. Well, it doesn't mean anything if you don't have any credit cards and you don't have any debt, but it does make a big difference when you're carrying date. You're also going to see higher car payments. Auto loans are also influenced by the federal fund rate, as are just about all loans consumed that consumers get from a bank. So with the Fed's tightening policy, the monthly payment on new and used cars is going to get more expensive. So what does it mean? Well, if you begin shopping for a house, you might have to lower the price range in which you're looking. If you're selling a home, you might have to be flexible on the price. If you're thinking about buying a new car, it might pay to consider a late model used car. And interest rates are likely to continue to move higher before they go down anytime soon. So of course, if we have some sort of economic crisis, yeah, the Fed's going to come in there and start lowering rates. They will be accommodative to the markets and so forth if they technically classify us into a recession. There's a couple of interesting reports today. President Trump now asked the Justice Department to review the Russian probe documents. Remember, on Monday, President Trump declassified 21 pages of a 101-page application by the FBI in a 2017 to renew a surveillance warrant allowing the FBI to monitor these communications of ex-Trump campaign aide Carter Page. Well, today, President Trump put the brakes on his plan to declassify and release documents and texts related to the investigation of the campaign. Trump had said in two tweets that he had asked the Justice Department's internal watchdog, Inspector General Michael Horowitz, to reveal the documents on an expedited basis after the concerns were raised by the DOJ officials in releasing the documents. So may have perceived a negative impact on the Russian probe. He said that key allies called to ask not to release, Trump tweeted. He says in the end, he can always classify if it proves necessary. And he told, President Trump told Fox News last night regarding to documents, we are moving along, we're working along, we're also dealing with foreign countries that do have a problem, I must tell you. I got called today from two very good allies saying, please, can we talk? It is not as simple as all of that. We do have to respect their wishes, but it will all come out. So a little interesting turn of events. It's interesting to wonder which allies called. So this was just a release a little bit ago, and I thought that was important to bring it to you. So we'll have to see what can and what won't be released. Something other interesting, now this comes from the French AFP, and so you can take it, Moscow and Beijing, they kind of lashed out today at Washington's new anti-Russian sanctions, which also targets China for the first time, warning the United States could face consequences. The Russian's deputy foreign minister, Sergei Rybakov, said the United States is playing with fire, and Beijing voiced strong indignation over this move. And we've seen the relationships between Russia and China grow. They've tightened up their ties this month. We're going to talk about it with James Corbett here in just a few minutes about the month-long conducted, or I should say the week-long joint military drills. These are Moscow's largest ever war games. Yesterday, China got caught up in the sanction war against Russia as the United States announced a new raft of measures that could punish third countries for dealing with Moscow. And China has purchased the fighter jets from Russia and the surface-to-air missile systems. And Beijing today urged the United States to withdraw these sanctions or bear the consequences. So I'm not sure how this all weighs in and if any of this is but again, that's a pretty strong warning to bear the consequences. We strongly urge the U.S. to immediately correct their mistake and withdraw their so-called sanctions. Otherwise, the U.S. will have to bear the consequences. U.S. isn't going to immediately correct their mistake, because I'm sure they don't see this as a mistake, and I don't see any changes. So what are those consequences? I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. A couple of those interesting articles. Let's see, how much time do we get? We got a couple minutes left of this first segment. There was a major cryptocurrency exchange in Japan is missing almost 6,000 bitcoins after an apparent hacking attack. This theft is equal to roughly $60 million and included $19.6 million worth of coins that belonged to clients. The exchange, I'm going to say ZAIF, Z-A-I-F. They confirmed that this week in a statement through Tech Bureau Corp, the firm that actually owns the exchange. The firm, in response, said it is selling its shares in ZAIF to make up for the lost money. Japan is home to the largest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world. These exchanges are registered through regulators there, but even so, the markets still appear unprepared to handle these enormous security risks of trading virtual coins. Report out at Newegg, anyone who purchased computer parts or other electronics for online retail giant Newegg between August 14th and September 18th should check your credit card statements. Two security firms found evidence of a code-based credit card skimmer used on their consumers. The researcher said the hackers were likely the same group behind the attacks on Ticketmaster and British Airways customers. They have yet to confirm whether or not a breach occurred at Newegg. Newegg has not confirmed. So be careful, ladies and gentlemen, who you do business online. They're all out there. They have these skimmers. They can check your credit cards. And sometimes the big they don't have to be huge charges. They can be enough charges that you don't pay much attention to if you don't check your statements. You know, if you don't use your credit card a lot, you just glance at it, it could be $50 or $100, and you might not think anything about it. So be very careful and check your statements. Well, I don't know if the U.S., I'd have to double check on this to see whether we ever find Equifax from their security breach, where they exposed half of the United States consumers and their financial information to hackers. They did drop the ball on security, and I don't think the U.S. has fined them, but the U.K. did. The United Kingdom said this week that Equifax failed to take appropriate steps, and they're fining them. So where's the United States fining Equifax? 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I'll be returning with James Corbett, so please stay tuned right after these few short messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and as always, I'm very pleased to welcome back to the program James Corbett. And as everyone knows, James is the founder and editor of the Corbett Report, which he started in 2007, and he also became the editorial writer for the International Forecaster, created by, we all know and loved, Bob Chapman, the economic analyst. And you can visit James' website at thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com, and also you can go to theinternationalforecaster.com and request a complimentary copy, and they'd be more than happy to get you an issue. And hello, James.
Well, hello. It's good to talk to you again. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's always great to have you here. We kind of always go around the world, and I know the one topic that you want to talk about, but may I ask you about a conspiracy theory first, and then that kind of goes right into here.
Let's do it, yeah. That's what I'm here for.
I haven't followed this one too closely because, and usually there is an element of truth in any conspiracy theory, I think. So I'm going to ask you, if you believe or if you have thought about the theory that John McCain was executed.
I am just hearing that theory for the first time right now, so okay. I have not heard anything about this.
Well, now you have something to do for the next 2 weeks. You can do a little bit of a search on that one, and yes, it was he was executed for his crimes and, you know, many other things, and again, I haven't followed it that much. So,
can you explain to me, I'm just trying to wrap my head around how that, I just don't understand that in any form.
Well, the elite executed him with his agreement.
His agreement? This is getting stranger.
Yes, and I don't have all the details in front of me, and I should, but this was just a last-minute question I wanted to ask.
All right. Well, I'll definitely have to look into that. It's intriguing, if nothing else.
Yes, yes. And speaking of conspiracy theories, you wanted to talk about Mother Jones in an article that was published, and you are mentioned.
Yeah, yeah. Yay, oh, my ears are burning. Yes, Mother Jones, which people may or may not know, is a left-leaning publication that, I don't know, I guess they probably have a print copy, but it's mostly online, I would imagine, these days. Anyway, motherjones.com just had an article up a couple of days ago by Tanya Riley. Political extremists are using YouTube to monetize their toxic ideas. Subheadline, a new report says the site has become a breeding ground for conspiracy theorists and white supremacy. So, the opening paragraphs, it starts by saying, if you search for Federal Reserve on YouTube, one of the first videos to surface is titled Century of Enslavement. Using archival footage and the kind of authoritative male voice, thank you very much, heard in countless historical documentaries, the 90-minute video espouses the idea the Federal Reserve was formed in secret by powerful, often Jewish, banking families in the early 20th century, causing America to spiral into debt. With over 1.6 million views, the video is categorized as news and politics. It was created by a channel called The Corbett Report, which also boasts documentaries touting conspiracy theories, including that 9/11 was was staged by the U.S. government and that global warming is a hoax. Heavens to Murgatroyd.
Oh, me, oh, my.
Oh, no. Watching the video quickly leads users down a rabbit hole of recommended videos that detail Illuminati conspiracy theories and blame Israel for 9/11. All right, so you see what is happening in this article, and I mean, you can imagine the rest, but by all means, go and actually read it if you're interested. But, of course, it's tying and lumping absolutely everyone who says anything on YouTube together into this big cauldron of, oh my God, can you believe this stuff is on YouTube? And it's all white supremacy and anti-Semitism and what have you. Although, of course, the Century of Enslavement does not talk about Jewish bankers or anything of the sort. They just throw that in there. It doesn't talk about the Illuminati. They just throw that in there. All of these other things that they just throw in and lump it all together because it's all, you know, it's all conspiracy theory. So you can imagine this is just a hit piece. And apparently this is prompted by MSNBC host Chris Hayes, who may be familiar to some of your audience,
yes,
who tweeted the link to my Federal Reserve documentary a couple of weeks ago, saying, you watch videos on YouTube all the time, so you go home and put Federal Reserve into YouTube search bar, and this is the first video that comes up, and it's a link to my documentary.
So,
thank you, Chris. Thank you for linking it. And in fact, a lot of the people in the tweet replies are saying that. That's actually a great video. Thanks for sharing. So thank you for getting a little bit more exposure to this. But, of course, seriously, I mean, there's a couple of things going on here. One is that this is the dinosaur media looking right in the face of their extinction. The asteroid has already hit, and, you know, the meteor has already come down, and they know that they're on the way out. And this is just now they're starting to realize, oh, we're dying here. So they're lashing out at everything that isn't them and all of this alternative, independent media on places like YouTube, where everyone has a voice. Oh, no! A platform called YouTube allows you to have a voice, and this is a problem because there's conspiracy theory everywhere. So, in one sense, it's laughable. And it, to be honest, obviously, having started the Corporate Report website 11 years ago, I saw this coming for a very long time. I was in podcasting in 2007, well before Joe Rogan or anyone else made the podcasts a household word. I was doing this because I knew the whole outdated system of tuning into MSNBC at 8 p.m. so that you can catch this or that program is such a silly, outdated idea of how to convey information, and that the internet was the future. I've enjoyed that 10-year lull or whatever it's been of me doing this work largely under the radar of these types of goons of the mouthpiece establishment media, because they figure, oh, it's on the internet, who cares about that? Well, everyone cares about that, and that's how people get their news these days. Welcome to the 21st century. But now that the eye of Sauron is focusing on sites like the Corbett Report, I mean, we can all see where this is heading. And of course, so the article itself takes the tack of, well, we can't allow these conspiracy theorists to sit there on YouTube monetizing their toxic ideas. And of course, the funny thing about that is I have never monetized my videos on YouTube and never will, because I've never wanted to get money from Google. But anyway, that being what it is, I think we can see where this is heading. And I've talked about this for years and years. They're going to crack down. The crackdown is coming. They're starting to demonetize. Oh, they're starting to age restrict videos. I had a New World Next Week video, my weekly video series with James Evan Pilato, MediaMonarchy.com. We did a video on Syria and the fact that they're saying there's going to be a chemical weapons attack in Syria in the near future, and when it happens, blame Assad. And so we did a video about that. Instantly, as soon as I hit the publish button, I got an email from YouTube. This video has been age restricted. It's literally two guys sitting there just talking about what's happening in Syria, but apparently that's unacceptable for anyone under the age of 18 who isn't signed into YouTube. So they're starting this. And in fact, in some ways, I find this to be much more insidious than outright banning. I mean, when they outright ban someone and take them off the platform, as we see with someone like Alex Jones, that creates a lot of attention, a lot of buzz, and there's a lot of talk about it. But when they do these things, they demonetize you, they age restrict your videos, they make it so they're harder to search. I guarantee you, in the very near future, when you type Federal Reserve into YouTube, you will not find my conspiracy theory video first, front and center. It'll be all the official, you know, Federal Reserve YouTube page and what have you. So that's the way that I think they're going to go with this. And that's much more insidious because you can't say I'm banned or, you know, they're not put in. No, I'm still there and you can still find me if you know exactly where I am. But they're going to make it harder and harder to find this material. And I think the days of me being able to produce a documentary that will get seen millions of times is probably in the past at this point, as they start cracking down on this. So in one sense, I want to laugh at this type of thing because it is so ridiculous and it's funny to watch these dinosaurs realizing they're going extinct. But of course, it's the backlash that I think we all have to be worried about and what it really means for our ability to access this type of information in the future.
Well, congratulations to you. You're making a difference, and you're making a difference to the point where they find you, a threat. And, you know, you mentioned that they're staring down in the face of, you know, their distinction. Isn't it kind of, I mean, they almost created their own problems. I mean, they're kind of creating the set, the trap, so they are extinct. You know, so, yep. You know, it's, mm-hmm. I mean, to some
Well, degree, I'll tell you a specific example of how they're creating their own extinction. I remember, it must have been 10 years ago now, during the financial crisis, the Lehman meltdown and all of that, I remember Jon Stewart, who had The Daily Show at that point, had Jim Cramer on. Mm-hmm. And they had a 20-minute conversation. I think most of it was online. They only aired 10 minutes of it or something. But I remember watching that conversation and thinking, I know that they're still only talking within a controlled level of discourse and they're not really hitting on some of the key issues here, but it was the type of conversation that was at least, it was more than we get in any of the kind of news programs or interview programs these days. We've been dumbed down to the level where that conversation that they were having, I remember seeing that and thinking, you know, if that had been at least the standard level of discourse on television when I started the website, I might not have started the website. I might have thought, well, you know, whatever, good enough. I don't have much to add to that. But it's because of the ridiculous, dumbed-down level of the information that they foist on us through the establishment media. The obvious, transparent propaganda is what motivated me to start the website in the first place. The Corbett Report and Century of Enslavement and all the other stuff that I do would not exist if the establishment media hadn't so completely forsaken its role as, you know, guardian, watchdog, whatever, fourth estate, all of this kind of nonsense, which clearly, I mean, 100% obviously is not happening in this day and age. We are needed. We have to insert our voices into this mix because the propaganda is just so over the top right now.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, they always talk about monetizing. Well, what do you think they do?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, come on.
They get paid handsomely for their lives.
Yes, yes, they do. And it kind of reminds me of like what we're seeing and experiencing here between the Republicans and the Democrats. The way the liberal left and the Democrats are reacting to just because Trump was elected. I mean, look how they're exposing their, I mean, it's amazing how the type of people they are. And I don't know if everyone sees it, but it's like, you know, they're opening up every window to who they really are, into their deep, dark souls. And I don't know if everybody can figure it out, but they're surely good at exposing it. And it's instead of just shutting up, I mean, you know, and you know, burying it for 4 years, you
right.
know, they become, you know, and well, it kind of reminds me the same.
Yeah, I think one of the things that a lot of people fail to understand that's so basic is that when you are criticizing someone, you are often revealing more about your own psychology and what makes you tick than you are about the person you're criticizing. And this is especially true in the context of the dinosaur media criticizing the independent media, because what they are essentially saying is, we are afraid of you having a voice. We are afraid of your voice in this mix. We want to be the authoritative people who can tell you reality, and we don't like it when you guys start saying things that we don't approve of, and we don't want you in that mix. This is exposing the fundamental lie that our society has been founded on for centuries now, that it's democracy and everyone gets a voice and you all have a part to play in this system. No, you don't. As soon as you start saying things they don't want you to say, they will find a way to take your voice away, whether that's at the ballot box or on YouTube, whatever it is. Whenever we have a fair fair playing field with the establishment. Suddenly, no, we need restrictions. No, not everyone should have a voice. No, your voice doesn't matter, and we don't want to hear from you. And we see that not only in things like now, obviously going after YouTube and platforms like this, but even for years now, we've seen establishment platform after establishment platform removing the comment section from their websites because, again, they do not want people to have a voice. And when people are calling them out on their propaganda, they look a little bit with egg in their face. So, yes. Again, they think they can control this conversation. But welcome to the 21st century. As I say, this is the Internet. This is how it functions. It is decentralized, and everybody gets a say in this conversation.
I don't know if you're ready to talk about that chemical attack. Last week was 9/11. Russian opened up its biggest war game since the Cold War days. The drills involved, 300,000 Russian troops. China's military, they were scheduled to conclude on Tuesday. In your most recent newsletter article, you wrote that these exercises are made all the more significant by the fact that they come hot on the heels of a major naval exercise in the Eastern Mediterranean, a.k.a. Syria's doorstep, earlier this month. These exercises are happening as the end game in Syria draws near, with Syrian troops and the Russian Air Force beginning their campaign to oust their final enclave of terrorist jihadists from Syria. False flag chemical attack coming. Happened. Both?
Yeah. Well, yes, it has happened numerous times over the past several years, and they're telegraphing another one. And we know this from pretty much every major MSM establishment outfit is now reporting breathlessly on the U.S. pronouncement that there will be a chemical attack in Idlib, which is one of the last terrorist holdouts in Syria, in the near future, just as Syria and the Russian forces are about to oust those terrorists from Idlib and really retake control of the country. Now we're getting word that there's going to be a chemical attack, which raises the age-old question, why on the verge of victory would President Assad use the very types of weapons that are A, militarily useless, and B, guaranteed, 100% guaranteed to get the ire of the entire world to bear down on him and the bombs to start raining down on him? Why would he do that? Let's not think too deeply about that. Let's just blindly believe, unquestioningly believe whatever story they come out with, whatever chemical attack is going to happen in the next month or two.
And you know, when they had the previous chemical attacks, I believe it was in 2017, I think was it like May or June or something like that. I mean, you had Israel over there bombing. It's like it's so easy to see what most likely happened. And you're right, why would he do that now? But do you think maybe, and we're going to be heading into a break here in just a few minutes, do you think that perhaps with the claims that this might happen in the near future might actually keep it from happening?
Well, that's a possibility, and I think that's the role of the independent media is to talk about false flag terrorism to basically take that magician trick away, because the magic trick only works when you don't see what's up the sleeve of the magician. So I think that's one of the things we have to do is highlight those previous examples and talk about them.
We're heading into a break. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my guest, James Clement. Tell me again tonight. Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light Systems today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm here with James Corbett, and we were talking about Syria and the possible false flag coming, chemical attack, and we were sort of finishing up there. I didn't know if you want to add anything else to that before we moved on.
Well, we were talking about the importance of highlighting these past events so that we know about that history, so that it does make it more difficult for them to pull off another false flag, because people will be more skeptical. So we should point out that, again, it has been talked about again and again and again and again over the past several years. So many of these chemical weapons attacks, quote unquote, from the Syrian government have turned out to be either outright hoaxes or actually attacks that took place but were launched by the rebels, so-called, the al-Qaeda terrorists. Mm-hmm. For example, in 2013, there was talks of sarin gas having been used, and it was the UN Human Rights Commissioner who came out and said, actually, no, it wasn't the Syrian government, it was the rebels who did that. Of course, all of the attention was on the initial claims that it was the Syrian government, none of the attention on the UN finding that it was not. Then later on that same year, you had a chemical attack in East Ghouta that, again, was instantly blamed on the Syrian government. In 2014, MIT came out with a report that said, actually, no, it was not from a Syrian government-held part of Damascus. It was from a terrorist-held part. So again, that doesn't add up. There was, as you say, in April of 2017, last year, just as they were talking about, you know, maybe there's a political solution here, maybe Assad doesn't have to go, then, lo and behold, there was this incident in Idlib, where there was a chemical attack of some sort that happened, or so we were told, but then investigators found that one of the most likely scenarios there was actually the bombing of a chemical storage facility that the terrorists were holding these chemical weapons, and that was bombed as part of a raid that, by the way, was talked about, that was signaled in advance on the deconfliction line by Russia to the U.S. and its proxy allies and al-Qaeda and what have you. But that was, of course, just blamed. They just said it was chemical munitions that had been deployed. And then earlier this year, of course, we also saw the infamous another chemical attack that, as soon as U.S. and American reporters got into Douma, I believe, was where this one took place, they found actually there was no chemical weapons attack at all. That the only thing that had happened was the asphyxiation that came from bombings that were taking place in the area and basically sucking the air out of the basements where people had gone to hide. There was no chemical weapons at all that had, attack that had taken place. But again, that reporting came weeks later. The initial reporting, oh my God, another chemical attack, look at these pictures, is what got all of the headlines. So over and over and over and over and over and over again, we've seen where the initial story gets all the the attention and the retraction gets zero. And of course, people just add that up to, oh, the Syrians are basically dropping chemical weapons on their own populations willy-nilly, which again makes absolutely no strategic or military sense, especially considering all of these areas where this is happening in East Ghouta and Douma and Idlib and other places are literally right on the doorstep of government-held areas. So are they deploying chemical weapons that can and presumably will affect their own population as well? I mean, even if they were thinking in that calculus, let alone the fact that these chemical bombs that they drop will kill maybe a couple of dozen people, whereas if they were just using bombs, they could kill a lot more people a lot more quickly if that was what was going on here. So again, it doesn't make any sort of military sense, and as we say, it makes no strategic sense whatsoever, especially April of last year, as they're talking about maybe there's a political solution, maybe Assad doesn't have to go, then chemical weapons attack and we get the Syria strikes. And then April of this year, we see similar sort of talk, well, maybe, you know, maybe we're going to start pulling out of Syria, and then there's this chemical weapons incident in Douma, so-called and alleged, and suddenly, well, we have to be in there indefinitely. So we see the same pattern, and it's not difficult to understand what's going on here.
And, you know, in another part, you have Yemen, you have the Saudis. I mean, we pulled some funding, the U.S. pulled some funding from the Saudis until they were, agreed to, you know, be a little more concerned about the civilian casualties. And, of course, they said, yeah, we'll do something. And, you know, then our money begins to flow back to the Saudis. And, you know, there a lot of the bombs, I guess, now is being reported or bombs that were made in USA. You have, you know, I mean, and not a peep anywhere do you hear people talk about what is happening there. And it just, I don't know if this just became a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, to where I continue to look for information because you can't find it anywhere.
It's hard to come by. But even as hard to come by as information on that is at the moment, a year ago even, it was even harder. There was almost no mention of it whatsoever. I have noticed in the past month or so, there has been more reporting about this, even on CNN and New York Times and The Guardian and what have you. So it's starting to get a bit of traction in the mainstream media. But people probably do not realize this is the largest humanitarian crisis going on in the world at the moment, and including the largest cholera outbreak in human history, recorded history anyway, as well as these atrocities that are ongoing on a regular basis, bombing of school buses and things like this, which everyone understands and admits and says, well, this is war criminal activity. But as you say, and the important part to understand is not only are them all of these munitions manufactured in the U.S., and that, again, that is not controversial in the least. I'm looking at a CNN story right now from August 17th, 2018. Bomb that killed 40 children in Yemen was supplied by the U.S., and they even show a bit of the shrapnel from that bomb with the English writing on it for use on MK-82, blah, blah, blah. Again, this is not a controversial point at all. And the more fundamental underlying point is the entire Saudi military adventure in Yemen right now would be utterly impossible without the approval of the U.S. They could not have done it without the U.S. giving them approval, tacitly or otherwise, or explicitly. In fact, really explicitly, because not only are the munitions being supplied, but there is active ongoing military support for this Saudi-Yemen adventure that's going on right now, including, so it has been alleged by multiple sources, although obviously no official confirmation, but the Saudi Air Force, which is just basically a bunch of pampered princes who want to, you know, have some decorations to wear on their chest, are obviously they're not really crack fighters and don't really know what they're doing. The implication is, and it's been reported by multiple sources, there are literally Americans sitting in the back seats of those fighter jets helping them go over the targets and launch their munitions. So again, whether it's that level of support or simply the logistical support that we know is happening as well as the arms sales, it could not happen without the U.S. support. And I think most Americans don't even know what's going on, let alone that it's going on with their tax dollar support.
What's going to bring that to an end? I mean, are they just going to continue to bomb them out of...
Well, Yeah. It certainly isn't going to be the UN or something that's going to step in and act as the world savior that it was always supposed to be. Because, again, the Saudis sit on a number of the human rights commissions and other things that would otherwise be sanctioning this type of activity. So, the only thing that will happen is if there is enough outcry, if they bomb enough school buses and there is enough public attention given to this, that the U.S., at least to save face, has to withdraw its actual support. And as you say, there's been talk about that. Just a couple of weeks ago, U.S. warned Saudi Arabia it may withdraw support if they continue bombing school children. Maybe. We might consider it. But, I wouldn't hold my breath until there's a lot more attention given to this issue.
Well, I guess there were another 18 fishermen that were killed off the coast. So, but no one seems to care. Speaking of the UN, next week President Trump is going to speak. Well, I guess it's the 26th that he's scheduled to speak there. Big deal, not a big deal, from your view?
Well, I think the annual UN General Assembly is, if nothing else, it's a good sign of which way the political winds are blowing and what kind of diplomatic changes maybe in the offing. So there, it's always, I think, useful to at least look at those types of statements and read the tea leaves. But again, it's just diplomatic speak. So generally, I wouldn't expect too much from it. But perhaps the more interesting thing is that apparently Trump is going to be chairing a convening of the UN Security Council, which, I don't know. I seem to recall when Obama did that back in 2009 or 10. I remember there was a huge big outcry about it from the right-leaning conservative media. Oh my God, this is the UN takeover and the end of the world and Obama's the Antichrist. I don't see that kind of coverage happening from the right side of the political con game anyway, from the Trump supporters. So I guess it's all right as long as it's our guy doing it. But I think that might be the more interesting thing to take a look at is what Trump does as presiding chair of the UN Security Council and whether that will be used to start the push against Iran, as everyone seems to be predicting.
This week, Poland offered the United States $2 billion to establish a permanent base. Do you think Russia's going to go along with that? Without a peep?
I actually haven't heard that story. Run that by me again. Poland is offering...
Poland had offered, the Poland's president was over here this week, and he offered President Trump $2 billion to establish a permanent military base in Poland.
I see.
They're going to call it Fort Trump.
So Poland would receive $2 billion or pay $2 billion?
They're paying.
Oh, they're very offering, interesting.
And they're offering the U.S. $2 billion to establish the base.
Interesting. Well, of course, exceptionally worrying if that does go ahead, because that obviously and automatically once again ratchets up tensions in Eastern Europe yet again, even as NATO and Russia are at each other's throats, almost literally at this point. And establishing a permanent military base in Poland would be, roughly equivalent to Russia establishing a permanent military base in Mexico. It would be an incredible heightening of the tensions that are going on there, and just another potential vector for some sort of confrontation, military confrontation to take place, whether people want it or not. Just the more military you have swarming around an area, the more likely there is for some person to do the wrong thing on the wrong day and set off the wrong chain of events that lead to war. And we should be thinking about that, considering we are on the centenary of the end of the First World War, which, of course, at least the immediate cause of which was the assassination of the Archduke Franz Ferdinand in Sarajevo. What does that have to do with the price of tea in China? I don't know, but suddenly the whole world's at war. And we should really think about how these types of events can start from something seemingly minor or seemingly not central to world events can have huge knock-on effects. So, yeah, very worrying if they do set up a military base in Poland.
The official newspaper of North Korea, ruling Workers' Party, said in a commentary on Sunday that Japan must change its tune and adopt a new approach toward North Korea if it wants to join the diplomatic fray in affecting rapidly evolving developments on the Korean Peninsula. And it said that the Japanese government had resorted to flattering the American master, neighboring big powers, and even the South Korean authorities, but it will never step on the sacred land of the Republic unless it drops its bad habits. We think Americans know of Trump's affection of Abe. Is Japan just kissing up to the U.S., or is there something else going on?
Well, I don't think Japan is really in the driver's seat here, so whether or not they're really actively involved in these talks or not may be something of a moot point or beside the point. I think the more, I guess the more important point from the practical perspective here is whether there is enough of the people on board with this process, and apparently China is still officially on board with the U.S. and South Korea and Japan on the subject of North Korean denuclearization. And I've talked about it many, many times. The only people who really should be at the heart of this these talks are the South and North Koreans. Mm-hmm. And what happens in the Korean Peninsula should be the matter for the Korean peoples to decide. But given that we live in this world of these great powers warring over these proxy states, the fact that China and the U.S. and South Korea and Japan are all on the same page, at least on paper, about their objective of achieving denuclearization says that at least at this time, I think that's where they're pushing for. And I've seen the latest deadline that they're looking for is January 2021 to achieve that denuclearization. I'm not holding my breath for it, but at any rate, as I say, if all of those states are lined up on that same page, that probably puts a bit of diplomatic weight behind it.
Do you think Shinzo Abe will be the will win his third term?
Oh,
you have an election?
Prime Minister of Japan.
Yes.
I just saw that news today that apparently he is has secured or is about to secure the leadership of his party for another term. So that pretty much guarantees prime ministership for the foreseeable future again, because there is no effective opposition in Japan at this point. It's just that the LDP, or the ruling party, have been for almost the entirety of the post-war period. That doesn't look likely to change anytime soon. So as long as Shinzo Abe is head of the LDP, he's going to be prime minister.
All right. We're just about out of time. I think we probably have just a few seconds. Any final thoughts real quick?
Just to once again let people know, the crackdown is beginning, and on YouTube and elsewhere, and it will be harder and harder to find voices like ours. So please do support Melody and the work she's doing. Please do support me, and spread the word. That's the most important way to get this out, because we can't rely on search algorithms to do it for us.
Ladies and gentlemen, visit James' website at thecorbettreport.com. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you, James.
That's too bad.